Our last speaker today is Randy Boberg. He is a principal research associate in the Health Policy Center at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. He has a law degree from Harvard, and he's been a health policy analyst and lawyer for over three decades. He's currently advising several states on the role that reinsurance can play in expanding health coverage, and he's studying the cost of uninsurance in Maine. He previously was a state insurance regulator in Massachusetts, and he was instrumental in developing policies on insurance premium setting and on regulation of Medigap and cancer insurance. He's written four books. He has over 100 publications. Since 1996, he's given over 100 presentations and testimonies for Congress, the National Conference of State Legislatures, the National Governors Association, the National Press Club, and the World Bank. And he's just beginning a reinsurance project here in Wisconsin for Academy Health under the Robert Wood Johnson State Coverage Initiative Program. Randy tells me that he has Midwestern roots. He grew up in Chicago. He learned to read in St. Louis. And he graduated from high school in Iowa City. So he tells me he's really a crazy Iowan at heart. So let's see if he lives up to that billing today. His topic is how states like New York and Arizona use reinsurance to help businesses control the cost of health insurance. There he is. Take her away.
Does this turn on automatically? Yeah. I get anxious standing in one place, so I like to move around. You notice that also puts me at a distance from my regulator. So I'm going to establish a field office. And when she holds up 20 or 10, okay? All right. It's always hard to get those agents and HMOs and so on out in the field if you're an insurance regulator. Rick Curtis used to talk a whole lot faster. He used to get many, many more words into a minute than he did today, but he made up for it by putting a whole lot of words on every slide. Why he would do that, given that he recognizes and is sensitive to the problems of aging eyesight, I'm not quite sure. And aging eyesight on an angle is particularly difficult, but I think he knew who his audience was, and it's people with a more forward-looking attitude towards life. Now, the last thing I need to do at the beginning is to recognize the gentleman who was the first man with the nerve to sit in the front. Now, my plan was to go out and chase you anyway, but I see that happily circumstances have forced some risk sharing, and we filled in here in the front row simply by limiting the number of choices that people had. Now, there's not very much. Which one is the laser and which one is? This one.
It's not. You have to point at this thing, Randy.
I have to point at this.
For the clicker.
For the clicker, yeah. On this first slide, there's not very much that counts. I already got my name pronounced in my dubious degree. What really is important here is it wasn't in the handout. There have been technical amendments since this was first promulgated, is to recognize the funder who was paid for this project on reinsurance, which we're in. And to say that the standard disclaimer applies. Now, I expect everybody knows what the standard disclaimer is. Who has an idea what the standard disclaimer is? Means that if I say anything insightful or intelligent, all the people involved, Urban Institute, State Coverage Initiative, the family group, and all the others, and you notice there are a lot of bugs on the handout as well, they all want you to remember who paid for this and was involved in bringing you here this morning. If I say something stupid and uninformed, remember the name is Boberg. One thing I learned when I first gave presentations in medical precincts at universities was that there are two rules. One is you have to show up with four color slides. And I put four colors on the first slide, but that's the end of that. And the second is you have to read every word on every slide. Well, if you're Rick Curtis, you could never possibly do that, and I am not going to try either. These are the topics that I'm going to cover in the order that I'm going to cover them. What is reinsurance? As the materials explain really quite admirably, it's insurance for insurers, for risk bearers. And risk bearers are of various types. But it's not something that relates directly to enrollees, unlike an exchange, a connector, a purchasing pool, et cetera. It's something where the primary carrier is relating to the enrollee and bearing the risk and paying the claims, whatever the nature of that relationship is. The reinsurance comes in the background and takes on some amount of that risk and shares. In the same way that with deductibles, coinsurance, and other cost sharing, there's a sharing of risk between a primary enrollee and the primary carrier. And the risk sharing can be of different types. It can be share and share alike, like coinsurance. It can be what the reinsurers call excess of loss, and what you or I would call in our primary coverage as a deductible. Because there's an upper limit, that can create a corridor. And I'll show that in a minute. And it can apply in different ways. Just like deductibles can be different for outpatient and inpatient care, there can be different rules. Same is true of reinsurance. Just to take an example, this is a simplified sketch of Healthy New York. I was told to focus on what states are doing. There are really only two states with major efforts of this type, and Arizona's is ending. Healthy New York is the poster child for this type of reinsurance. The idea is that the primary carrier is primary. Oops. And so at the low end, just like now, the primary carrier, above whatever deductibles and cost sharing apply with the enrollee, pays for everything. Then, on a per-person end-of-the-year annual basis, if allowable claims go above a specified level, in New York, it's $25,000 a year, the reinsurance kicks in. The enrollee doesn't see it, but the primary carrier is getting reimbursed for 90% in New York, up to a ceiling, which in New York I have not done New York. I've got 25 and 100 for the corridor. In New York, they've in fact now got 5 to 75. So I goofed when I said it was Healthy New York. In Arizona, it's a little bit different approach. It's a little more complicated slide, so let me take you through the two pieces of it. This is what's similar to what I just described, the claims on a per-person basis. The primary carrier covers most of that, but there's private reinsurance, which the participating plans have to get, that covers on something like the Healthy New York basis, but I think with much higher thresholds, some of that risk on a per-person basis. But then at least for a while, as a new form of subsidy, the state kicked in some money and said to the participating plans, and I think there were three at the time they started it, they were managed care plans, well, we're going to protect you on an aggregate basis. You participate in the program, you're not going to lose your shirt. How did they do that? They said, if all of this that you're paying goes above a specified level of the premiums that you get, we're going to hold you harmless. We're going to do aggregate reinsurance for the year. And they have phased that out at this point. But that is another form of reinsurance. It's not uncommon in the private market for smaller players. What are the rationales for reinsurance? In the private sector, where lots of risk bearers buy reinsurance, unless they're really quite large, certainly a firm like the Urban Institute, when it wants to self-insure with about 450 employees, we need reinsurance to protect against the really catastrophic claim, and that's a vital part of how we approach it. Why are we doing that? We're doing it because we want protection against going bust. It's bad enough to take the risk of not winning enough research proposals, but adding in the risk that Boberg is going to go crazy with new drugs is too much. In fact, Boberg is on the federal employees plan through his spouse, but they still withhold from my salary. Rick, we see it quite clearly that there's a trade-off between benefits and salary. So that's mainly financial protection that we're getting. And it's often both specific and aggregate, that is per person and for the whole firm or line of business. The risk of those high-cost claims, then by virtue of the reinsurer, are spread across similar parties to some extent, but often they're really held on that same firm and they're adjusted over time. And so what you're really doing is spreading things out over time in the private market very often. You also may be able to get specialized knowledge and services about high-cost claims. The Urban Institute is not going to learn to manage one high-cost drug case, but the reinsurer may know how to do that. It doesn't lower costs. In 1 year, it would, but over time, there's a premium. Urban Institute has to pay the full cost of our reinsurance. There may be some risk pooling, but a lot of it's going to come back to us, and we have to pay for the loading that the reinsurer puts on there. They're not in business to give away claims coverage. In the public sector, the intent is more to subsidize. And one of the things that gets people's attention in healthcare is it is possible to spend a huge amount of money on a small number of cases, whereas for most people, not very much is spent at all. I don't think you can probably make out in this room those exact numbers. Perhaps, are they legible? They may be. I think before these are web posted, there needs to be another technical amendment on this table. But in this low end, $0 to $2,500, one finds 73% of the population, only 13% of the money. That's on a per year basis. Those are Wisconsin estimates, adjusting a big federal survey called the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey that's at the basis of the reinsurance modeling that we're doing. So this is the Wisconsin population under 65, as best we can emulate it, and most of the people and very little of the money is at the low end. At the other end, above $50,000 a year, less than 1% of the population, but 23.7% of the money. When I say money, we're observing medical costs, the provider payments that are reported by households and then verified by the federal people who go out and check with hospitals and so on. So coming in with reinsurance has the potential to offload an awful lot of cost at the high end. Of course, it has to be made up from somewhere else. Then there are different layers here that are illustrated that show that in this middle area, say the 5,000 level, where Healthy New York kicked in, you're up to the top a little bit more than 10% of the population, but you're starting to get a whole lot of money in that middle range. Exactly what the characteristics are of those people, we haven't analyzed yet, but we've got a little bit of a start on that. So the public goals are basically, in the short run, to subsidize the price of coverage. If you make it cheaper in the way of medical costs for an insurance company to operate, that should flow through to lower premiums. Either competition or good regulation by the field office should make sure that if I'm an insurer who's getting subsidy from the state, that I pass that through in the form of lower premiums. That's the basic notion. In addition, there is probably an added kicker of some amount, how much is not really known, that says, okay, there's less risk involved. The insurance company is assuming less risk. They ought to charge less in the same way that an investor who takes a lower risk investment expects to get more back. How big that effect is, which is called a lower risk premium, is not clear. Another way to think about it is that when you have a riskier business, you need more capital to protect yourself against unforeseen events. And in insurance regulation, in banking regulation, there are actual regulations that take into account how risky the business is and say how much capital needs to be behind it. And that could be less if the state is standing behind an insurance company. The other thing, and the reason we at Urban had proposed a reinsurance plan for Massachusetts, which they did not in fact do, is to avoid some of the effects of selection of people who are on a boundary between being in an exchange and not being in an exchange, and being in coverage or not coverage. If you reimburse the insurance policy for the costs, particularly in that mid-range, you take away some of the insurer's incentive to worry about exactly what type of people are showing up and signing up. That's at least one of the things. Also, and this is historically the case in the coverage for Medicaid managed care, if you want new insurance companies able to start without having huge piles of money and big skyscrapers behind them, if you want a provider-oriented company to be able to enter, it is a great help to be able to protect them against some huge risk. And that's a little bit what was going on in Arizona, too, I think. How you design that, what you want to protect against catastrophe is the very high end. What you want to worry about for adverse selection is probably the middle. I can't prove that, but that's my common sense understanding of the situation. And you can target this in different ways and finance it in different ways, all of which would have different implications. This is an example of what adverse selection, or just selection, from the point of view of the insurance company, what they worry about is adverse selection. From the point of view of a healthy young immortal, most of whom do, in fact, I think, get coverage, just not as high as us older folks, what they want is selection to a lower price product because they don't expect to use very much. This is the cost per person per year, and it's arrayed according to the responses on the questionnaire about age and health status. So the young people are down here at the left end, except for the fair or poor health young people. I presume there are a lot of newborns in there. I'm not sure of that, but I'm presuming that's the case. Then the other people follows age and health. So the average premium, and this, the research assistant was meant to put a line on this slide that showed the average, but it's not there, but it must be somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000. That's what a community rated policy would cost. Obviously, then the insurance companies would worry about getting these people who are going to cost way more than their premiums, and they want to attract these people who are going to cost way less. And that's a huge problem in insurance. Finally, this slide compares public and private rationales. Depending on the design, they certainly use the same sort of mechanisms. They certainly both rely on the notion that the reinsurer and the primary insurer know how to get along and you can handle claims. There won't be very many claims for reinsurance if you have a really high threshold. There will be more if you have a low threshold. If you're at $5,000, I expect even in rural Wisconsin, if you go in the hospital, it's quite easy to spend $5,000. About one person in 10, I think, goes in the hospital every year. There are big differences between private and public. The biggest one is the subsidy aspect of public reinsurance. Private reinsurance is purely a risk-bearing matter. It's between private parties. It's obviously worth it to some HMOs, some commercial carriers, many, many self-insured groups of medium and even somewhat large size to buy private reinsurance. But that's all up to them. They're paying the full cost of it. The public funds, the idea is you want to make the coverage cheaper to get more people in. And in the same way that when the employer subsidizes coverage for any of us, it makes the younger, healthier ones more willing to take it and pay some share of premiums because of the subsidy. So you may be helping to build a better risk pool by subsidizing coverage. That argument would apply not just to reinsurance, but to any form of public subsidy. Then the question is, do you target, how is this targeted? In some sense, reinsurance is a little like risk adjustment, which Rick mentioned. But instead of being risk adjustment up front, it's risk adjustment at the end. You see who had the high costs, and you cover those. That brings new questions of the effect on incentives to economize. Those have to be addressed. Also, any of these reforms is more complicated than the simple thing. The ultimate target in the case of reinsurance with a public subsidy is, of course, the public. There are no particular rationale for subsidizing insurance companies or possibly even employers, and reinsurance can only really be part of that reform. So you have to consider the context in which it's embedded. What's the evidence on this? Well, as Karen said, I'm at the early middle of a project rather than at the end, so I haven't got a lot of nice numbers. It is the case, however, that small group reform, not in Wisconsin, but in most places, in the early 90s, when new rules were set about the rating that could be used by private insurers in small group markets in Connecticut and elsewhere, there was a reinsurance pool associated with most of those. In those cases, the funding came from assessments on the participants, typically. Where those were voluntary, the big guys didn't play. None of them have worked particularly well, and the word on small group reform in the 1990s model is it didn't do a heck of a lot. In the late 90s, the Arizona Healthcare Group started that type of reinsurance that I talked about that did apparently help them get through a rough patch. I'm not clear how influential it was. It is only part of what they do, but they thought it was important at the time. Apparently, they think it's not important anymore because they have phased it out. But they still do maintain the requirement of private reinsurance for the participating plans. Healthy New York is the new guy on the block. That went in 2001. Do I remember that right? Something like that. But it grew very slowly at first. They're in about their fifth year, and they're finally hitting their stride. That's a limited amount of money. Another attraction, I think, at least in New York, for reinsurance as opposed to, say, a premium subsidy, is that unlike an entitlement of a premium subsidy, the legislature could say, we have this much money. And if it's not enough at the end of the year, you just pay less than the 90%. So there was that feature as well. Healthy New York and Arizona had different approaches, as I suggested. Vermont has one that I'm not really tremendously on top of, but they have decided it's worth doing, and their target is to reduce premiums by 10 to 30%. And there are a number of others that are working on it. I'm getting the stop sign, so I can just say you can read this too. Not huge impacts as a percentage, but it is a substantial number of people and a safety valve for people who are previously uninsured. One really, really big difference in both Arizona and New York is that these things were targeted to people and employers who were not getting coverage, who were uninsured. That was considered here in Wisconsin, at least so far the council has recommended instead focusing on small groups who have coverage and trying to stop the erosion of coverage rather than covering the uninsured. It's certainly the case that there are premium savings. Those are seen. The reasons I explained a little bit already that there could be further impacts are below. Adverse selection. Again, important that this is just one component of reform. This is the model. I can take questions on that. It's a fairly complex model that's trying to build a picture, a virtual picture inside a computer of what Wisconsin looks like, where all the people are, what size employers they are, what their health insurance costs are, so that we would know if you do this type of reinsurance, here's what will happen. It's very central to that we need to know what's going on in Wisconsin. The final point I would like to make at the end is that whether or not one goes with reinsurance, one very good thing to do is to think about what you think the dynamics of the current situation are. What is the conceptual framework that causes the problems that you're trying to fix? And then how does reinsurance or any other policy implement actually change that in a fashion that you can logically lay out that will achieve the result you want to do? As you do that carefully for reinsurance, that will help you think about other things as well. Finally, at the end here, Rick Curtis told me when we talked a little while ago that he wanted me to join him in a duet. And he said, well, you have a fairly good speaking voice. Can't you sing? And I said, well, no, my wife, when I sing Happy Birthday, says, why can't you stay on tune? And Rick said, oh, plan B. And I told him that when I have to do something creative, I have to stick with simpler things. I go with limericks. So reinsurance has come to the isthmus, but one can't give it out as for Christmas. We all need to know just how coverage will grow to see if it's worthy of itzvahs. Wisconsin has heard insured's plight. Yes, even when budgets are tight. I hope we can aid, that's all those bugs at the bottom, as through options you wade, because badgers always seek to do right.
I have questions. Yeah. Questions for Randy Boberg?
What did the last six slides say? That's the big question.
Okay.
You'll have to check at lunch.
Well, thank you. I think we understand the concept of reinsurance, which is to help employers or insurance companies bear the risk of these catastrophic
yes.
illnesses. How do you build in benchmarks or accountability if we subsidize this kind of plan to be sure that we are getting the savings or the premiums go down or that we are getting value?
I would suspect that any state wanting to spend state money is going to want to know that. And unlike people who are just shopping, going to Walmart or Costco or whatever, you want to know whether the state's help has achieved the desired impact. I suspect that you want, at a minimum, monitoring, probably not regulation, you don't have that now, but I would suspect you want, at a minimum, monitoring. The way the council has laid things out, it would be fairly clear what the reinsurance authority is giving the smaller employers in the way of a subsidy. Then the question would be, how much those are lowering premiums, and that would have to be tracked, and the actuaries would have to be involved. You have a lot of actuarial talent in state government, you know, for the state employees plan and in other ways, and I'm assuming that this is not an insurmountable thing, but that it would be a component of what you want to do. That's the basic model. The basic model in the short run is make it cheaper and they will come. And the question is how much cheaper and how many will come. Over the long run, it's a little harder. Will this damp down bouncing around in the small group market? And that's another thing that is a little bit harder to model. It's not so simple. Sir?
In your slide, you mentioned that Vermont saying the impact could be 10 to 30% on premiums. I assume that's more than just making the market more efficient. There's got to be some subsidy involved
yes,
in that.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And that's just a transfer then for part of the savings, and part of it's having a more efficient system, because
well,
you're subsidizing
and whether
your
the
pool
system is more efficient. Were you the one who asked about cost containment
yeah.
before? If this is part of a big reform and there's some built-in things, you know, a tax cap, competing HMOs, something that's supposed to be focusing on cost containment, then this would be part of making the reform go down, making it more palatable. And keeping more insurers in the market so you could have more competition, but it would only be one component. It would be the sugar coating on the pill, but then the pill has to have the things that are going to make things cheaper. As I said, Massachusetts, at least the people that my colleagues were dealing with, didn't want to go there right away. They wanted to focus first and foremost on getting everyone in. They had a hard enough political task on reconciling the legislature, which wanted to have burdens on employers, which might well have failed, as Pat says, and the governor and the Urban Institute, which was advising an individual mandate with other bells and whistles to make that work better. And then they had the big safety net hospitals were getting huge amounts of DSH and upper payment limit money through Medicaid. Massachusetts is a Medicaid maximization state. Wisconsin is not. So that was a different pot of money, and they had to worry about the politics of dealing with that. And you can see the vestiges of that in how the operation works in the Commonwealth Care, isn't that the name of the mid-level part of this, which is mainly the safety net hospitals, health plans.
For questions and answers, we have live mics down here. I'm going to ask our other two speakers to come down here. We have live mics. And.